Welcome to the Cloquet Vineyard. To find out more of who we are, go to cloquetvineyard.org. Thanks for listening and have a good and beautiful day.
Let me say good morning and I'm glad everyone is here. As Chris said, my name is Dietrich Winter, and I have just the honor of sometimes a couple times a year just sharing parts of my journey and thing, my discovery, and it's really an honor. It's great to kind of shake off the public speaking rust and to be up here. We're spending a few weeks on values. And values are interesting. They're, you know, they kind of show what's important to you. And we get to assign them, really, in our lives, you know, what's important to us, what the value are to things. You know, my kids, you know, if they have $5 in the piggy bank, and mom and dad have said they could spend it, we go into a store, and they're immediately searching for everything in the store that's $5 or less to find the most valuable thing that is worth $5 to them. And I've once imagined, you know, what it would be like if there was no labels, because someone assigned those values. Chink, chink. How much do these things are worth? And our values are like that. You know, they go into the store. What's most important to you? What would you spend $5 on? And you know, as a group of Jesus-following people, you know, come together and decide, you know, who are we? What's the flavor of our community? What's important to us? And in our lives, you know, our values, even if we haven't consciously thought about them, they come out in our actions, our choices, our methods, the way we live. And if you're like me, as you get older, at some point you stop and look and say, what is important to me? You know, how have I been living? And how maybe do I want to live? And am I where I want to be? And we reevaluate and we set these like signposts that point in a direction we want to go, and we can look back and see, how are we doing? Are we on the right path? Are we heading in the right direction? Are we where we want to be? And our community of Jesus followers, and we have a, kind of a unique blend of values. I find them very unique. At the same time, each individually is rooted in history of Jesus following communities throughout history. One of them, just in my journey and discovery and preparing for this, kind of found that this, the value we're talking about today, turns some of the others on their head. It's really vital, more vital than I ever anticipated when I got to really start thinking about it. But before I go there, I want to tell you about another journey that I went on. So I had the privilege, and really a privilege, of traveling a bunch with my family over the last 9 months, off and on, not the whole 9 months. And we did this journey down the West Coast and up the East Coast of the United States and visited most of the national parks along the way. And it was an amazing opportunity that I know is like incredibly once in a lifetime and unique, and probably will never get to have anything quite like this again. But seeing what we have set aside as national parks is amazing. Awe-inspiring, incredible. Going places like Mount Rainier and Yosemite, Joshua Tree, that's just the West Coast. West Coast was my favorite. And it was amazing. And one question that would get asked over and over again to our family when we'd be home and with friends was, hey, what was the most amazing thing you saw? And everybody had an answer. For my kids, a lot of them, it was Yosemite. I missed most of Yosemite. I was home for work, so I didn't quite have the same connection they did. For others, it might be the Redwoods in Northern California. But I had this experience that was fairly brief, but very powerful to me. So we went to the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument. And it's a very small thing. It's not a very elaborate. It's not like Yellowstone or the other national parks. But our family was there, and in classic winter family fashion, we got there late. And but we'll make the most of it. So we do a bunch of junior ranger stuff, and we actually shut the place down. We're hiking on a little trail and waving at the rangers as they're leaving and driving, and the parking lot is empty except for our truck. And So the place is empty, and it's cool. There's Rocky Mountains, there's history, cool geology. But then on the way out, Sarah mentions, hey, there's this hike we could go on. There's a lake called Coldwater Lake, and it's a short hike back. Why don't we check it out on our way out? It's getting towards sunset. It would be cool. So we pull over. Some of the family's tired. They don't want to hike. So we let some of the kids stay with their older brother, teenage brother, in the truck while we hike off into the woods to this lake. So it was me, Sarah, and our youngest. And it was amazing. This lake was created when Mount St. Helens erupted. Some debris closed off a small mountain stream and created a brand new mountain lake. So this place had never really been touched. It wasn't being logged off. It was never being developed. There hadn't been a lake there for someone to put a cabin on. It's just empty. There's just a path to it and a bench. And we are the only people anywhere near it. Maybe 10 miles around is empty of humans. And it struck me. I sat down on this bench, and I didn't want to leave. Sarah wanted to leave at some point, because for her, we're alone. There could be anyone out here. But for me, it was like, wow. I don't know if there's any other place quite like this in the world where we can be at this pristine, untouched place that is so beautiful, and it's so empty. And the silence was so quiet. You couldn't hear any cars on a highway miles away. There was no other people, no rangers, no motors of any sort. It's just silent, like I could hear ringing in my ears. And it was almost deafening, the silence. It was so beautiful. I was there, I was struck by this feeling of awe and inspiration. You know, hikers, they get out of the way and out into nature and strip away all the distractions of what's around us. Think the Boundary Waters. This is kind of our equivalent in Minnesota. You can get away and never see another soul for weeks if you really work at it. And there's all this space and this silence. And as we strip away the other voices, the distractions, we're left with this quiet. And it's so quiet, there's like a whisper. A whisper that, because our ears are so used to all the distractions around us, it's hard to miss. And for me as a Jesus follower, I hear in that, I hear love and I hear peace. I hear of the creation of an amazing divine God who is in and through everything that God has created. And I found myself responding in like quiet internal worship. Like it impacted me. And when people would ask us, what was the most amazing thing? I'm like, man, I sat on this bench at this lake. You know, and it's no famous lake. It's like everybody else talking about Yosemite, you know, and Mount Rainier. I'm like, there was this lake. And it just struck me. And it occurred to me while I was preparing for this that half my family was sitting in the truck and missed it. They don't even know what I was talking about when I would talk about this lake. But it just struck me. And it was beauty, and it led to worship. And it confused me, like, why would the essence of this creation affect me so much and draw me so much towards worship? But it makes sense to me. As I've been going through this journey, I discovered something. I want to take you on some of the steps I went through. And I want to read a passage from John 12:32, and Jesus is talking here. He says, now is the time for judgment on this world. Now the prince of this world will be driven out, and I, when I'm lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. Maybe not where you thought I was going, but stay with me. So, and I like the Message version as well. It reads very similar, but it uses the words, I will attract everyone to me and gather them around me. You know, in one sense, Jesus is talking very literally about this future he is heading to, that he is just methodically going through his work and heading towards a physical, ugly death, painful death on a cross. He's talking in that sense. But there's also a contrast here between two methodologies about how we can function in our world, where on one side, you have the ugliness of the cross, and on the other side, you have the beauty of the cross. And the nuance is really is captured up in the first part of those sentences. The nuance is there where it says, now the prince of this world will be lifted up. Or in the Message, Satan will be driven out. Did I say lifted up? I may have said that backwards. But you're talking about the ruler of this world, or Satan, the ruler of this world. You know, if you were to take Jesus' life, in modern terms, and you binge watch it, and you go through the whole season of the life and times of Jesus, season one, and here we're in episode 6, right? But you would have seen a recurring theme over and over again, this contrast between how the world works, or Satan, ruler of the world, influencer, tempter, and how the kingdom of God works. This kingdom that Jesus is living out right here in their presence. And it goes all the way back to, episode 4. And Jesus is going out into the wilderness. The Holy Spirit sends him there. He's preparing for his public ministry. And it's a familiar story for many Jesus followers that then Satan comes and tempts him. And Jesus has been thirsty. He's fasting and in the desert. He's been hungry. And he's preparing for this difficult work and ministry that leads to a painful, ugly end on a cross. And Satan tempts him. He comes to him. It's you hungry? You can make bread. Let's do it. I mean, you can do this the hard way, but there's an easier way, right? Okay. All right. So you want to do it the hard way, it's fine. How about water? You're thirsty. You can get water. You can do it the hard way. You can be self-sacrificing. You can give your life. You can do it the hard way. Go on the cross. Yeah, see if I care. But then he takes him up to this high place and points out the world, all the kingdoms where he says he has power. I have dominion over this. I have power over this. And the key thing here is that no one ever contradicts this. You're binge watching the life of Jesus, and this never gets contradicted. Even here in this verse in 12:31, he says, Satan, the ruler of this world, the prince of this world, doesn't contradict. He doesn't say, hey, oh, no, he doesn't have power here. No. Because in this systems, you see that kind of power working out. The kingdoms of the world, we've seen lots of painful, ugly things. You say, hey, you can do it the hard way. But tell you what, there's an easy way. Bow down to me, and I'll just give it to you. And you can change the world like that. You can make the laws. You can compel people. You can force the issue. You can make things just like you want it. There's no need to go to an ugly, painful end. So we see this contrast bouncing back and forth throughout the whole series of Jesus' life. And it's never contradicted that this power is there. Now, in that first part, it says, now is the time for judgment on this world. And our minds immediately think, oh, okay, the people. That world equals people. And we get caught in this sometimes. I've maybe been this myself, but I've seen people all right, Jesus is going to come and judge the world. It's all right. I mean, we never openly celebrate that. It's we'll pray for people, want things to go well, God speak to them. It's yeah, get them. But it's not what it's talking about. It's contrasting these two ways of approaching the world. The two sides of the cross, the ugliness of the cross, this force, compulsion, guilt, power, and the other side that is selfless, is serving, is sacrificing, is love. It's the beautiful side of the cross. And Jesus says when he is lifted up, when he is made visible, that he would draw all people unto him. That there is an inherent attractiveness to what he is doing. There's beauty. When he's lifted up, he is going to draw all people to him. All people. And it's something so beautiful that you can't help but notice. And not everyone will give it their full attention, but someone's like, huh, that's interesting. When you see the real beauty of what Jesus is doing, has done, his life, his ministry, his work, his sacrifice, you can't help but notice it. And not everyone will choose to follow his model, but that's a part of what makes it beautiful. You know, we can sit on the bench and we can breathe it in, we can listen, we can worship, or we can walk on by on the trail, or we can sit in the truck. You know, we have that choice. It's part of the beauty. And one way is easy and one way is hard. And the beautiful way can be hard. And the powers of the world kept trying to pull Jesus in. They tried to pull him into every little argument, every little system they could. They would challenge him on, to take sides on debates, you know, to take power, like to become this king. Do it. Overthrow the powers that are above you. Take a stand on divorce, on inheritance laws, on paying taxes, the overthrowing of a corrupt, inept, evil government. Even sin. He spoke to sin for sure. He spoke to sin. But he refused to be drawn into some of the debates and to take sides and to stand in their arguments. I mean, adultery, it's pretty clear cut. Sin, right? But he's faced with a woman caught in adultery and they want him to take a side and make a stand. What does he do? He plays in the sand. He shows the absurdity of his creation trying to judge like they're the creator. Creation judging creation. I get this image of a young child going into their parents' closet and putting on their mom's work clothes. They got the dress shoes, they grab the robe, and they go sit on the judicial bench down at the county courthouse, and they oversee probate for a while. Now they've seen their mom do it for a while. Surely they can do it too. You know, but the absurdity of creation judging creation. And I mean, what if you get it wrong? I mean, it's deep stuff. It'd be so easy to get drawn in. I mean, the temptation of every Jesus-looking community throughout history is to get drawn in. And we've seen it. I mean, third century, it's suddenly part of the political system. And we have armies and powers. We can now change the world and make it look just like we want it to look. And things haven't become the utopia that anyone thought it would be. The world is still broken. People are still hurting. And it'd be so easy to be drawn in. But we can also participate in the beauty that Jesus works through us. And as we become more and more like him, as we are Jesus followers, we are making him more and more visible. And more beauty gets to be shown to the world and draw people in. They take notice. When we love like he did. Or we can be out to do it the easy way. We can compel people through power, through guilt. It's tough, because when all these nations are being drawn together, you're drawing all kinds of different people. It's really a very beautiful, diverse crowd when we're talking about all people. But that means different people, people with differences, different preferences, different opinions, maybe different beliefs. People with different languages and origins, different smells. You know, and that can be tough. That's the tough love. That's the tough way to go. Because the easy way is to be on the powerful side. And well-intentioned followers of Jesus have done lots of harm over history. And they're well-intentioned and have good things on their hearts. And I don't condemn anyone, because one thing I am certain about this message is that at some point I have and will done this myself. I've done well-intentioned things that weren't beautiful. They're on the ugly side of things. There's a book I had to read in college called Well-Intentioned Dragons. I only want to mention it, don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but there's an illustration that well-intentioned people can easily be like a dragon. They can accidentally stomp on things around them. Dragons are dragons, you know. You're passionate about something. Sometimes you're going to spew flames and you're going to leave charred remains and scars and hurt people, but you're well-intentioned and your heart's in the right place. But it's easy to do damage too when we're passionate about things. But it's such a burden, because what if you're wrong? I mean, to think that we have the full picture of everything and that we boy, we know exactly how everyone should be, and we should all look exactly the same in our thinking and our actions. It is such a burden when really there's freedom. There's freedom through what Christ did. There's freedom. There's freedom through love. All the other values, you see, can be flipped. We can love in a very well-intentioned way that leaves scars. The examples of tough love in the world that can leave scars, that can be hurtful, words that burn. But Jesus' life and work demonstrated a self-sacrificial type of love that I propose is only possible because he wasn't caught up in the world's systems. He wasn't arguing over divorce, inheritance laws, debates and divisions, tyrannical rule of an oppressor, things that are obviously feels like we should be involved in, but he wasn't. And as we follow Jesus, we can find ourselves less and less tied up in the same things and more capacity to give love outrageously to others. There's freedom through humility. Scripture says that we can do nothing without Christ. There's freedom in saying, okay, I don't have it all together. I don't know it all. I don't have to know it all. And I can be okay with people who think differently than me, who are different than me, have like different kinds of music. The kinds of debates we fight about sometimes in the history of Jesus-looking communities is comical. I in my margins, I had this thought, and I started writing a list of all the jobs and roles I've had since high school. You know, I've trained horses. I've worked in construction as a valet driver, warehouse worker, delivery driver, school bus, motor coach. I coached some basketball, graphic designer. I dabble in motion graphics. I was a machinist, bookkeeper, administrator, direct support professional, behavior support specialist. I worked in mental health, qualified disability professional, nursing care. I was a college student, high school student, graduate student. So many circles of people. I've had so many crazy jobs, and I'm sure I've forgotten some. And in not one of them did I find a group of people who expected everyone to think just like them or to have the same opinions, the same preferences. We had different tastes in music, different tastes in art, different thoughts on life, different values, different priorities. We did different things on weekends. And it was just fine. It was kind of amazing. The only place where that didn't exist was the one job I didn't list, the 15 years I was a pastor. And there's something sad because so much was missed. There's something missed, like so the opportunities for joy because people have different interests, different passions. And oh boy, I'm starting to sound like a real downer, but there is so much joy and to be gained. There's so much out there we can add when we want to take on beauty, be to take in Jesus and let it change us with humility and love. We have freedom through beautiful living, really living a beautiful life, because when someone who's a Jesus follower moves into the community, it can be really good news to everyone around there that we are in the middle of our neighborhood, in our PTA, in our workplace, and we're bringing this kind of selfless, sacrificial kind of love and service. And there is freedom in not being entangled in all the other things and being good news, literally, to be there. And there's freedom because there's no agenda needed. There's no agenda needed. So God's creation was made for us to participate in, to enjoy. And there's no agenda needed. Like, we as a community believe in appreciating beauty for beauty's sake because it comes out of the creativity and the beauty of a beautiful God who's through all of it. So I'm sitting at Coldwater Lake, and I don't know that God has a particular message, you know, that is he's trying to teach me or anything. It just is. It's just beautiful. And I can just take in his beauty, and I can give it back out. So how do we want to respond? We want to respond by taking this in. And then I encourage you to do a couple of things. Some of you, Find a place this week that is beautiful, or at least quiet. Sit down and chew on it, and just chew on it for a while, and wait for that quiet to be in your ears and your mind, and chew on all of this. And if you're like me, you got to spend some time thinking about where you have stepped to the left towards the ugly side of the cross, and you have well-intentionally hurt relationships, said words that left scars. Because it's always beautiful to fix relationships. It is always beautiful. It's more important. Relationships are always more important than the sacrifice it takes to right them. It's always worth it to give to fix a relationship. There's beauty in that. So some of us, we just need to take time and do an inventory. Like, where do I need to go to fix relationship? Where have I well-intentionally burned something? And then some of you are like me. I was in a weird place. I realized, as at the end of writing this, I realized I've never thought of myself as beautiful. Here I am. I'm part of God's creation. And I've never thought of myself as beautiful. And you know, as a parent, you know, our children, I mean, you see their beauty the moment you meet them. You can see it in them. And they could ask you, am I beautiful? And it's like, oh, yes, you have no idea how beautiful you are. And as adults, we're not so kind to ourselves. You know, we've seen all kinds of measurements of beauty. And I gave myself permission. I had to give myself permission to say, Dietrich, you're beautiful. You're beautiful. And it was awkward and strange and different for me. But I want to say is for everyone here, whether it's today, you're listening to the podcast, or it's tomorrow, months from now, I give you permission. You know, this isn't God speaking. It's just me. It's just to help us get over our mental hurdles. Like, I give you permission. You can say to yourself, I'm beautiful. You're part of this creation that God has made. And just the wonder of us and the wonder of our relationships, how we interact, and the beauty of our children and our families. There's something there to focus on and to care for and to connect with God and to worship. You're beautiful. And if you have a hard time with that, I encourage you, with all these things, we're going to have some people come up who can pray for you. You can partner with them. Because sometimes it's hard to give ourselves permission to go a different direction or to accept who we are, that God created us and we're beautiful. It can be hard to sort out relationships. So I encourage you to partner with others in prayer, and there are ways of a prayer team down here. So I'm going to invite them forward. And if you'd stand with me, I'm going to pray and close. So yes, Jesus, we thank you. We thank you for going through the hard ugliness of the cross, that you're willing to put yourself out there for us. And we recognize the beauty. We accept it and we take it in. Your love, your kindness, your sacrifice, your selflessness. I ask that you would work through us to make that beauty even more visible. I ask you to work through us as you draw in all people to you. I ask that you would heal. You'd be healing hearts where there's pain. And you help us to just pull our good intentions out into the open and look at them honestly. They're good. They're good things. Now, what are our methods? Are they beautiful? Because nothing to do with you should be ugly. You are good. You are good and beautiful. Jesus, I ask that you just bless our time today as we go from here, that we carry your beauty out with us. Amen.